Welcome one and all to another episode of The Damage Report with me, John Enroll, and Anna Kasparian. Anna, welcome to the show.
Howdy, how you doing?
Glad to have you here. Everybody watching, you already know who Anna is, but the legendary host of The Young Turks, as well as a whole bunch of other stuff. Anna, it's great to have you on. Thank you for joining us.
It's always fun to do the show, especially since I get to skip my production meeting. So thanks for having
me. Exactly. They'll take care of it. Hell, we can go over if you want and let them do all the producing. If you want a little bit of a half day.
No, that ship has sailed. Production meeting should have ended a minute or two ago. Yeah. So yeah.
Okay. Well, glad to have you on. We do have a lot that we're gonna be talking about, including Biden's speech about democracy and political violence and all that. Seemed pretty basic to me. Turned out in the end, it angered a lot of people on the right who were not fans of democracy, but big fans of political violence. Let's see, we're gonna find out what a rape panel is. That's gonna be fun. A bit more on kitty litter, a little bit of good news when it comes to Halloween, and we're gonna debate the pandemic amnesty. I saw an editorial about this, about whether we should forgive one another for the things we did and said and believed and advocated for during the pandemic. I think that's gonna be a fun talk. And then to close out our show in the aftermath, AOC got into it with Elon Musk right before a bunch of prominent right wingers apparently began to turn on him as well. He's being attacked from left and right, and you do in fact love to see it. So we're gonna have a little bit of fun to close off the show. In advance of all that though, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream, that would be great. And if you want to send us any tweets, comments, or super chats, we'll respond as we go. But with all that said, Anna, are you ready to start the show?
Damn right I am. Let's do it.
Damn, I like the enthusiasm. Okay, damn right. Let's jump into this. With less than 1 week to go until the midterm elections, President Joe Biden decided to appear in public and give a speech defending democracy and denouncing the normalization of political violence. Here's a bit of that.
Assailant entered the home asking, "Where's Nancy? Where's Nancy?" Those are the very same words used by the mob when they stormed the United States Capitol on January the 6th, when they broke windows, kicked in the doors, brutally attacked law enforcement, roamed the corridors hunting for officials, and erected gallows to hang the former Vice President Mike Pence. It was an enraged mob that had been whipped up into a frenzy by a president repeating over and over again the big lie that the election of 2020 had been stolen. It's a lie that fueled the dangerous rise in political violence and voter intimidation over the past 2 years.
Okay, so this is the sort of thing that the president is supposed to do. When you have a crisis, whether it's a crisis of democracy or any other sort of crisis, the president should be there to reassure people, to indicate that he's going to do something about it. When political violence is happening, he should be there to denounce it. And so I'm glad that he's doing this. And I don't really disagree with or dislike a single word that he said, either in that clip or in other clips we're gonna show you. I do kind of wish though that he'd bring a little bit more fire to it. Like, considering the stakes, that this is about the future of democracy. That's not just a campaign thing, it's real. And that we are in the immediate aftermath of an assassination plot against the Speaker of the House. I get that he's 93 years old, but I don't know, hit him with some like B12 or something. Anna, what do you think?
It's always worked against Biden that he is not a great public speaker. So I think that's what you're kind of hitting at with your commentary. What I would say though is, I think that this speech is totally fine. I have no problem with him giving it. The thing is, you know, obviously we're quickly approaching the midterms and he's sending a warning to America. Listen, if we help Trump and MAGA candidates solidify power in this country, there's a lot at stake. And I totally get that. But you also have to pay attention to what motivates voters to cast their ballots. And there have now been multiple polls indicating that while, yes, most Americans acknowledge that there is a threat to democracy, they are concerned about it. When it comes to the top issues that, you know, motivate them to go to the ballot box, it's inflation, it's other issues. So the majority of Americans acknowledge the risks to democracy, but according to a Siena College New York Times poll, only 7% of them say that it's influencing their vote at the ballot box.
Sure.
That concerns me. So I give you that long rambling explanation to make the real point I want to make, which is the best case you can make for the electorate to vote for the Democratic Party is to give them something to vote for, other than just trying to scare them constantly with what's at stake. And I think we've seen this same strategy by Democrats in so many election cycles that for some people it even seems cliche and they're not taking the risk seriously,
sure,
right? So I'm a little worried about that. So I don't know. I don't know what's gonna happen next week with the midterms. I'm concerned. And I do think that what he is warning Americans about is absolutely legitimate. It's just that most Americans are looking at what's in front of them right now, and those are the issues that seem to matter most to them.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I think it's complex. I think what we're seeing right here though is not, you're rightly pointing out that the Democrats are, well, not all Democrats, but Biden is mostly presenting, to the extent that he's presenting a case for the Democrats, it's to be scared of the other side. But on the other side, what the Republicans are offering is it's fear of the status quo. It's not like they're talking about crime and inflation, but it's not that they're talking about all the concrete steps they're going to take to reverse it. They're just saying it's really bad. They're coming for you. Like, it is still just fear from top to bottom.
Definitely. I'm definitely not discounting that. But in terms of what tends to motivate their voters, fear works. Whereas with Democratic voters, I just think at this point, a lot of people who tend to vote for Democrats are a little fatigued from, you know, oh my God, there's this investigation, there's that investigation. All of this stuff was legitimate. I'm not downplaying it. But I think that fatigue is now really working against the Democratic Party, and they need to focus their messaging on economic solutions and what they've accomplished economically, those kinds of things.
Yeah, and look, I think that a lot of candidates are doing that in their stump speeches, but you do also need the figurehead of the party to do what you're saying, and he isn't as much. And also, it's not just that it's fear versus fear. As you're sort of saying, some fears are more abstract than others, and the concrete fears are probably gonna win out. I think you should be more afraid of the end of democracy, because the end of democracy is not gonna lead to like more economic equality and justice. But inflation and crime are more immediate. And there's more immediate stuff than that. If I was talking to you about how inflation is really bad, but there's a guy approaching you with a knife, you're probably gonna be more worried about the more concrete threat. The issue that I have is I see editorials like, are voters willing to trade democracy for, you know, like lower crime? But the point I would make to them is that's not actually what's happening. You're not actually giving up democracy and then getting a solution to the problems. You're just giving up democracy. The Republicans don't care about inflation or like making sure that people are employed or like they don't care about any of that stuff.
So you're right about
that. It's a phantom trade.
You're right that the Republican Party doesn't care about any of that stuff. But you also have to keep in mind, John, that the work you do requires you to really be in touch and fully informed on everything that's happening in politics every single day. Most Americans don't have that luxury because their job requires something entirely different. And so it's incumbent upon Democrats, including Joe Biden, to do a little more of what we saw Obama do recently, which is hit Republicans where it hurts. Call them out on what they actually want to do to the economy, how they want to continue redistributing wealth, not from the top to the bottom, but from the bottom to the top, how they want to exacerbate inequality, how they have this plot to gut Social Security and Medicare. These are messages that resonate with voters across the aisle as well. And so I want to see more of that, because again, I think people have become too used to the, you know, fear mongering about our democracy. Again, it is legitimate, but you have to change the message up and hit Republicans where it hurts economically as well.
I think that you're totally right. And then also, like, you know, before we transition into some of the response to what Biden had to say, I fully expect that the midterms are going to be bad. I also thought that a year ago. I didn't necessarily think it as much 6 weeks ago. Things change over time. We do have to like we know that coming, like if it's really bad, what are the establishment Republicans going to be saying? Like it was defund the police or something. Like I don't know. They would see. I don't know. We need to be careful about what lessons we learn and factor in that while. Like I do think Biden could be doing more. I think there's a lot of things the Democrats could be doing. It also is a midterm election where the Democrats control the White House, and that has basically always resulted in losses for the party in power. Inflation is high, gas prices are high. That sometimes you go to war with the army you've got. That's the situation. It's gonna have a negative effect. We just sort of have to expect that. I think the Democrats could do some things to mitigate that negative respect that they're, or the negative effect that they're not doing, but that is going to have an effect. And I think that we're seeing it in the polls right now. That said, with what Biden had to say, and I'll give you one more quote. He said, we'll have our differences, but there's something else at stake. Democracy itself, what we were doing now will determine if democracy will long endure. This just seems like a pretty stock standard, like you're not a fascist, so you want there to be democracy. This shouldn't be controversial. Denouncing political violence shouldn't be controversial, but for some, it was. So let's jump ahead to our third video. We'll jump right into Brian Kilmeade.
There was nothing urgent about that speech. I think it was such a waste of good TV time or radio time, however you listened to it. He gave that speech, could have been written 2 years ago. It was not in the news. He acts like Nancy Pelosi's husband is the only one who's been attacked.
Occasionally over the past few years, I have given Brian Kilmeade some credit for things. I would like to apologize for that. That was my mistake and my bad. He's terrible. And there he is apparently making the case that an American president standing up for democracy and denouncing political violence isn't timely enough. It was boring. It took away a few minutes. I was watching The Watcher or something. You made me miss part of an episode. Seriously, Brian Kilmeade. Now, look, you're not the biggest MAGA person in the world. You know what that side represents. You know what the attack on Paul Pelosi represents. The idea that you're personally aggrieved by the president speaking up about that is ridiculous. This is you doing performative impurity for your base. That's all it is. But he gets actually more specific. He didn't just have a problem with the speech. He had a problem with a particular line in the speech. Take a look at this.
And then you bring up Donald Trump, January 6th, and Paul Pelosi, and saying they heard the words, where's Nancy? Right. That's the same thing the FedEx guy says when he needs a signature. Where's Nancy is nothing perilous. That's what you do when you're looking for Nancy. There's nothing, there's no two things that are together. That guy, the nudist, Black Lives Matter enthusiasts, pride flag owner, living in a bus, who sexually abused his children, has nothing to do with January 6th, has nothing to do with Donald Trump, has everything to do with the crime in San Francisco.
Well, except that he believes basically every conspiracy theory Donald Trump has said in the last few years. He believes all of the insane conspiracy theories that admittedly Brian Kilmeade doesn't frequently spread on the show, but others on his network do. It's all of the Republican right wing stuff. That's what he actually believes. But so yes, he believes conspiracy theories about the Paul Pelosi attack. He doesn't want you to pressure the Republicans to have a reckoning for their normalization of political violence. That is super expected. But his issue, Anna, with the where's Nancy thing, it's what the FedEx guy says. Yeah, it might be what the FedEx guy says, but it's what the insurrectionists said as they stalk through the halls of Congress looking to lynch Nancy Pelosi. And it's what the guy last week said as he was talking about his plot to break her kneecaps. I don't really understand what Brian Kilmeade's point is supposed to be there, except to reassure his audience, you don't have to take seriously that a guy nearly assassinated the Speaker of the House a week ago.
I just think we need to accept that people like Brian Kilmeade are gonna do exactly what we think they're gonna do every time there's an example of a right wing conspiracy theorist or someone who might be mentally unstable and has been incited by the right wing. Anytime they carry out an act of violence, we know what the playbook is gonna be. And the individuals who watch Fox News, the conservative media commentators, they like what happened. They don't want to change anything about their rhetoric. They don't want unity in the country. They've been egging on a civil war for years now. And so, yeah, Brian Kilmeade is going to say exactly what you're going to predict that he would say after there's another example of some unhinged right-wing lunatic carrying out an act of violence. I don't know what the solution is. What I do know is at some point, I mean, all I can think of is just mocking people like Brian Kilmeade, like how he just debases himself and embarrasses himself with that completely like that thinly veiled nonsense argument. But Democrats need to do more to address the issue in an indirect way, because I don't think that giving speeches about it is going to solve it. I don't think that there's any appeal to morality that will be persuasive to Republican voters, or more importantly, the Republican Party. They immediately heard the news and decided to push crazy conspiracy theories, blame Nancy Pelosi for whatever reason. I mean, it's what you would expect. And I don't know what else to say about it at this point. I mean, we're dealing with monstrous people who say vomitous things, and they're never gonna stop.
I agree. I
don't know what to do.
Don't have a solution either. And I find that to be frustrating. It seems weird that we would have to just see this happening and then go, oh, okay. They inspire these acts of violence, knowing what they're doing when they inspire them. The attack happens, and then they spend the next week running defense for the assassin. Mm-hmm. Pretending facts about him, making up nonsense, laughing about it. And we know watching that makes it more likely that these attacks happen. I was listening to, I think, The Daily, and they were talking about the threats that different members of Congress get. Nancy Pelosi gets the most, but Ilhan Omar and AOC get a ton as well. Like, this is taking us into particularly dark territory, but I would be lying if I didn't say that at all times, I have one of the little background processes running in my brain is this the day that they get murdered?
Wow.
Like, I've been worrying that since they got elected and watching Fox's coverage of them. Two freshman congresswomen that they immediately began talking about on a daily basis, insanely covering them, digging up videos of them dancing, talking about their sex lives like Tucker Carlson does. Obviously hoping to inspire physical or sexual violence against them. And they're barely even protected by leadership, even though leadership can see the targeting of them. And we know what the right wing wants. And so we're just supposed to just watch this. And then I guess we get to be shocked if something happens someday. And when it happens, by the way, they will respond in the exact same way. If AOC were to be gunned down at a town hall, you know, knock on wood,
they would love
Sean Hannity will do a thing about, oh, eight years earlier, the assassin said a thing. So what are you gonna do? They killed a congressperson. That's what they'll do. And we are just supposed to watch this as if there is nothing that can be done about this. And I don't know what we can do, even if we have a platform. Doesn't seem like there's anything we can do. A random person doesn't seem like there's anything we could do. But I kind of feel like Biden and the Democrats could have done something, if not to shut down the rhetoric, at least to strengthen election laws to make it less likely that these insane fascists take power and make it impossible for us to ever get power back again. They could have done something about that, I feel like.
Oh, they absolutely could have. And that's the thing. I mean, what frustrates me so much about the Democrats constantly talking about the threats to our democracy is they were in a position of power. They're in a position of power right now. Yeah, that's a slim majority. But when it comes to something like lifting the debt ceiling, they'll find, you know, carve outs for the filibuster. Yep. They'll find a way to make it happen. When it came to the voting rights bill, they didn't even try, John. They didn't even try. You know, with the Build Back Better Act, there was months and months of negotiations going back and forth. How do we save it? How do we get it passed, right? When it came to voting rights, they didn't even try. We were initially told that they were going to shelve Build Back Better so they can focus on a Voting Rights Act. And they didn't even work on the Voting Rights Act. That's what happened. And so when I hear Joe Biden specifically call out the voter intimidation that's happening near ballot boxes in Arizona, it's like, well, you know, there could have been a federal law preventing that from happening. Yeah. There could have been under your leadership. with a majority of Democrats in Congress.
Yep. No, we just said.
I mean, how am I supposed to not get angry at the Democratic Party? How am I supposed to and that's the thing. I'm so sick of election after election, you know. Same thing. It's always the same thing. We failed. We didn't deliver on anything we promised that we would deliver on. But Republicans are so scary. They're going to destroy our democracy. You have to vote for us. I'm so sick of finding myself in the same position over and over again. It is their mess. It is their doing. They had an opportunity to pass a voting rights bill. They didn't do it. And anyone who comes at me and says, well, you know, there's this problem with the system and there was that obstacle and this, when they want to get something done, they get it done. When Republicans want to get something done, even if it's tremendously unpopular, like a massive 2017 tax cut for the rich, they get it done.
Yeah. Well, we're going to turn, not immediately, to more positive news, but it's coming. It's coming. Patience, hold. That's coming. We have some other important news, though, coming up after this. I mean, I haven't checked. I don't think so. I will tell you that, again, I am reiterating my plea from earlier this week. Whoever is filling up the bowls of candy at work, please stop.
Keep doing it.
Stop it.
Sure.
Stop, man, it.
John, what do you think of Tootsie Rolls? Because I feel like Tootsie Rolls get a bad rap, but you like—
I like Tootsie Rolls.
Of course you do. Yes. Okay.
It's a unique flavor. What's wrong with it? I even like the flavored fruity Me Tootsie too. Rolls. Those are good too.
Me too. They're delicious.
They should be the standard one, actually. Whatever that dark one is, which isn't chocolate, it's dark. I don't know what that flavor is supposed to be.
I think it's supposed to be cola.
Is it really?
Yeah.
That can't be, is it? Okay, we're gonna look that up.
Wait, there's anyway, like regular Tootsie Roll. That is
regular Tootsie Roll.
Yeah, that's supposed
cola?
To be
cola.
No,
oh, but it's not. But it's not chocolate though. I don't know. American chocolate's super weird anyway. Well, we're gonna talk more about candy coming up. But for now, I'm just joking. I'm not trying to give people medical information about diabetes. Please do not come to me for literally any facts, let alone about your health. Anyway, with that said, let's turn to some facts and my thoughts on them. Emails from the Trump team back in the lead up to the inauguration in 2020 apparently show that their plot to stop the certification, to stop Joe Biden from becoming the president, had a secret little card up their sleeve, and he's standing right over there. They appeared to think that on the SCOTUS, they could count on Clarence Thomas to save them, to buy them the time they needed to overthrow American democracy. We're gonna give you excerpts from some emails that were part of 8 that lawyer John Eastman sought to shield from the January 6th Select Committee. And you're gonna find out very soon why he didn't want them to get these emails. A judge did order that they be released, which is why we're getting these excerpts right now. So here's one. This was sent on December 31st. So this is a week before the insurrection, saying we want to frame things so that Thomas could be the one to issue some sort of stay or other circuit justice opinion saying Georgia is in legitimate doubt. So not that it is, it wasn't. They knew that Trump had lost Georgia, but they thought Clarence Thomas, we could probably get him to pretend that Georgia's in doubt. And then after we do that, then if that one gets thrown out, then none of the votes really count, not as far as Mike Pence will be concerned. And then the whole thing can topple. Thomas could end up being the key, one of the lawyers ended up saying. It could be our only chance to get a favorable judicial opinion by January 6th, which might hold up the Georgia count in Congress. Eastman responded, I think I agree with this. If we can just get this case pending before the Supreme Court by January 5th, ideally with something positive written by a judge or justice, hopefully Thomas, I think it's our best shot at holding up the count of a state in Congress. And so, why? Why were these two different lawyers so sure that Clarence Thomas could be their savior? I mean, after all, Clarence Thomas, as far as I can tell, hadn't said anything publicly about the big lie or election fraud. Clarence Thomas has very rarely spoken in the last few decades. So what would have given them the idea that Clarence Thomas would agree with their conspiracy theories about Georgia? Well, I can't say for sure. What I can say is that the January 6th committee did talk recently with Ginny Thomas, the same Ginny Thomas that while she was messaging all, basically everyone that could potentially interfere with the election, did contact John Eastman. So she also talked to Mark Meadows and state lawmakers and a whole bunch of staff and all that. But the wife of Clarence Thomas was contacting one of the two lawyers on these emails. It is possible that that's all disconnected from this revelation. It's also possible, I would say likely, that it's not disconnected. That maybe she was wrong, but she gave them the idea that Clarence Thomas would potentially give them the judicial framework or foundation necessary to stop the election certification from going forward. Anna, what do you think?
I think that this is the kind of stuff that leads to distrust toward our institutions and opens up a window for people to start getting radicalized with conspiracy theories and all sorts of nonsense. The reason why people don't trust our institutions is because of this kind of gross corruption that goes unchecked. Someone like Clarence Thomas should have already recused himself in deciding cases involving the big lie in January 6th. For instance, he was able to participate in a decision having to do with a subpoena that Senator Lindsey Graham did not want to comply with. And that subpoena requires him to testify in Georgia in regard to the phone conversations that he and Trump had with the Secretary of State there, which, you know, of course, one of the calls was with Trump basically telling him to find 11,000 votes so Georgia can go to him instead of Biden. Anyway, luckily in that particular case, the Supreme Court finally decided that Graham must comply with the subpoena. But even though the ruling was the correct ruling, I still think Clarence Thomas should recuse himself because of the fact that his wife was very much entrenched in this garbage plot to overturn the election.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, so we have to bear in mind both the good and the bad from the point of view of Clarence Thomas. So Clarence Thomas did not step in and stop the certification, if that was even possible. So that's good. On the other hand, he has, as you just were saying, he's gotten involved in this to protect Donald Trump. He's already stepped in to try to shield disclosure of certain documents and things like that. And so, yeah, he should 100% be recusing himself. But again, like the idea that he would recuse himself because of a clear, obvious, repetitive conflict of interest, that's a norm. And the norms we've learned will not save us. They are not, no one is going to comply with any of this stuff from the right. They will maybe comply with the law, even though usually not that. The norms, no. Civility, no. Common sense or decency, no. That's not how it works. They want power, they're acquiring power, they're going to hold on to power, and that's pretty much it. Anyway, maybe someday we'll find out what the January 6th committee thinks about their meeting with Ginny Thomas. For now, she's off pursuing her conspiracy theories and trying to stop democracy, I guess. That's how she's spending her later years.
You know, sometimes I feel like Clarence Thomas is hellbent on punishing us, like broadly speaking, the left, because of the fact that anyone would dare to try to hold him accountable for the sexual harassment allegations against him. But then I look at his life and I consider how unpleasant his wife is, and maybe his entire life is one big punishment. So
yeah,
that gives me.
Yeah,
some.
I mean, he's pretty rough too. I think they both could do better. But anyway, yes, maybe that's a little bit of karma, I suppose. Okay, let's turn now to just the worst thing. This is like almost a spiritual follow-up update to the Dr. Oz story. You'll know what I'm talking about in just a minute. Let's talk about Bo Hines, congressional candidate that I don't think we've ever mentioned on the show before. He apparently-
His name is Bo Hines. Sorry for interrupting you. His name is Bo.
Bo Hines. Bo, it's his real name, Bo Hines. He's a 27-year-old congressional candidate. Young candidates are becoming more common. But in this guy's defense, he comes equipped with a lot of experience. He was a college football player, and then he briefly worked for a couple of Republicans, and then that's it. Anyway, in campaigning in a year where Roe v. Wade has been utterly annihilated, a lot of these candidates are having to be careful about how they talk about abortion and access to abortion. And Bo Hines is also being careful. He has an idea for how to sort of compromise between the two different sides. He thinks that abortion should be unlawful, except in cases where a mother's life is at risk. Okay, so that seems pretty extreme. He thinks victims of rape and incest, though, should be allowed to get an abortion on a case-by-case basis through a community-level review process outside the jurisdiction of the federal government. like getting together a group of politicians to weigh your particular story, your trauma, to decide whether you get to have an abortion. Critics have dubbed this rape panels, and I think that's perfectly fair. The idea that you would have to come in the immediate aftermath of the worst thing that has ever happened to you to stand before a group of dudes to explain why your rape was bad enough that you should be allowed to get an abortion, that's utterly horrendous. This is Bo Hines, by the way. He's endorsed by Donald Trump. I mean, why wouldn't Donald Trump have endorsed him? He's a 27-year-old guy with literally no experience whatsoever who holds the sort of radical ideas that you're supposed to for the former most powerful person in the world to believe that you should have a position in Congress. Anyway, rape panels, that's potentially even worse than what Dr. Oz was saying with the local political officials getting involved. Anna, what do you think?
I think that people like him look at Gilead and think, oh, this is the how-to manual for us. I mean, so incredibly gross. I mean, government couldn't possibly get any bigger. You know, having a panel of politicians make a determination about something traumatic that may have happened to someone. We don't need any government official involved in those incredibly important, intimate decisions that have absolutely no impact on them, could have an impact on the country. We do spend tens of billions of dollars every year on unwanted pregnancies. But when it comes to the real consequences, whether it be health-wise, economically, all of those consequences lie in the woman's life, not in the lives of these randos who want to latch on to this disgusting American Taliban message to rally support for their campaigns. But you know, to be honest, when you look at the electorate and where most of them stand on the issue of reproductive rights, they didn't want to ban abortion. So if this guy wants to go around campaigning this way, I don't know if it yields the dividends that he's expecting it to. But I predict that it could actually hurt him. So go for it, Bo.
Well, go for it, Bo. Look, it is North Carolina, so you know it's hard to say. I would say that if we're looking for evidence about what he actually thinks will help him or hurt him, we do have a bit of that evidence. And that is that he had previously said that he just supports blanket prohibitions on abortion. So this is supposed to be a softening of that, letting a bunch of old dudes hear about your dad raping you or whatever. Also, after winning the May 17th primary, he removed the life and family section from his website, which previously included links to a fundraising page that claimed life begins at conception and the rights of the unborn must be protected. So while we don't know much about this guy, and let's be clear, Donald Trump and the other Republicans that have endorsed him don't know much about this guy, because there is literally not much to know, because he's a 27-year-old guy that played some football and then worked for some Republicans and that's it. We can add to the list of things we know about him that he is a complete and utter coward. That, oh yeah, during the primary, he was super strong and bold. The life of the unborn, the rights need to be protected. As soon as he's done with that, get it off the website. I don't want people to know what I actually believe. Then they might know who I am and what I would do to them, and then they wouldn't support me. And I really want them to support some idea of what I am based on ignorance. What an utter coward. He's not alone in that. Most of the super strong alpha Republicans ran screaming in terror from their previously stated positions on abortion after they won their primaries. But that's who this guy is. And by the way, just to close out, let's see. He's gotten the majority of his campaign funds from a trust fund. Oh, isn't that nice? Isn't it nice to have that? Oh, Bo Hines is such an amazing example of incredibly confident white mediocrity, full of privilege. Anyway, he campaigned on an America First economy, but his campaign hats are made in China, which is fun. He has pushed the big lie and calls for a complete halt to all immigration for 10 years. So cool guy. With all of this, without any qualifications and radical extreme positions, the two polls that I was able to find for this had him up by 5. And then the opponent, the Democrat, up by 1. So this is a toss up at best. This insane radical who's accomplished literally nothing in his life and would want your kids, if they were raped, to go before a rape panel might well be the next member of Congress.
And there are so many other races just like this. I mean, so I can't help but think about the Senate races, which I think have an even bigger impact considering how long their terms are and how small Congress is compared to the House. We could have Dr. Oz be a United States Senator. We could have J.D. Vance be a United States Senator. And while it's true that the party in power typically ends up losing power, or at least the majority in the midterm elections, I just feel like some of these races were layups. And Tim Ryan, I think in the final hour, really started pushing an aggressive and effective campaign. I don't know if it's if it was done in time to beat J.D. Vance, but that is also one of those close races that I'm worried about.
Yeah, that's true. We talked a little bit about some of what he had to say. That was good. I don't love Tim Ryan or anything like that, but
yeah,
he's at least trying.
J.D. Vance, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, well, look, we need to take our second break. When we come back, we're gonna talk a little bit about kitty litter, a little bit about candy. It's gonna be a lot of fun, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. I should have worded that more thoughtfully. Apologies. Anyway, okay, with that said, we got a couple more things to talk about to close out this hour. There's going to come a time when we're gonna go a solid 6 months without ever having to talk about kitty litter. But that day is not today. Roll the footage.
Guess what? We have furries and buzzies in classrooms. They lick themselves, they're cats. When they don't like something, they hiss. People walk down the hallway and they jump out.
I want to know what a fuzzy is. I've heard of furries. Is a fuzzy a subculture within furries? And if so, why would Don Boldick know about it? Why would he have such deep, in-depth knowledge into furry subcultures? Anyway, what you heard there was a guy who wants to be a senator talking again about the idea that kids identify as cats or fuzzies, that they go to the bathroom in kitty litter. And now, because of course these things have to develop, you can't just say the same thing over and over again, that's not true. Now they're licking themselves and licking each other because these Republicans can't talk about kids for more than 3 or 4 minutes without being fascinated with something about their sex lives and their groins and their tongues and something sexual about them. Anyway, it's not true, you'll be shocked to find out. The actual academy he's talking about there, Pinkerton Academy, says it has come to our attention that at a recent event in Claremont, Don Boldick named Pinkerton in false claims suggesting that unhygienic, disturbing practices are taking place in our classrooms and spaces on campus. We want to assure our community that these statements are entirely untrue. They invite blah, blah, blah free speech, but there's no kitty litter. But the fact that it's been debunked, that it's not true, like an adult might respond to that by learning and growing, maybe apologizing for what they said. Don Boldick, though, he's gonna go in a different direction.
I had a parent and a student in that audience who came up to me and told me all about it. I've had that all across the state. So I'm only articulating what I heard from Granite Staters, parents and children.
The school has come out and said that that's completely false.
Well, you know, they came out and said they didn't mask children. They came out and said they didn't do a lot of things, right? They don't teach CRT, which they do. They don't treat transgender, which they do. I'm not backing down, okay? You got the wrong guy. Just because they say it, they need to prove it. Prove it. I got parents and kids telling me they need to prove it to us. I don't need to prove it to them.
Yeah, I get that these guys have such fragile masculinity that the very concept of not backing down is a net good. Even what you're not backing down from is a buffoonish statement that you made. They don't teach CRT. They don't teach transgender. I don't know what that is, but they definitely don't have the litter boxes. And simply saying they should prove that they don't, I want to talk a little bit about proof. How exactly would they prove that? How would they prove that there's not kitty litter? Would they what, take photos of every single room, every minute of every day? How would they prove sufficiently to you that that didn't happen? That's not how proof actually works. If you make a ridiculous claim, it is on you to prove that there's evidence for believing that. And the evidence can't just be some woman said it to me. People say crazy things, people believe crazy things, and I know that because I just watched you speak. And in the same way that you can say stuff that you don't know, I almost swore, a damn thing about, whoever that woman is that supposedly told you about it can do the same. Anna, what do you think?
I think that he is asking for proof because he is a gross pervert who is very openly and transparently sharing his fantasies about, you know, students licking themselves. That was in the first video that you showed. And what does he want? Does he want images of the student's bathroom? Is that what he's looking for? To fuel more of his disgusting perversions? I mean, this is what these people are thinking about all day. They're thinking about students licking themselves. What is wrong with him?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Don Boldick, I heard a woman, Anna Kasparian, say that you just think about kids licking themselves all day. So I'm not backing down. If you don't think about kids licking themselves all day, prove it. Prove it, okay? Because I'm not backing down.
I mean, it's hard to prove considering he's on camera talking about students licking themselves, which means he completely made that up.
Yep.
He's like thinking about students doing things and then saying what he's thinking. This is what he's thinking about. It is creepy as hell. The fact that like people aren't realizing that or noticing that blows my mind.
I know. All they're focused on is supposedly creeps coming for their kids, and all they do is surround themselves with Republican creeps thinking about and talking about their kids.
Yeah, 100%.
That seems weird. Now, I want to focus on progress, on something good happening. Let's transition now to our third video.
I have a friend, and my friend's wife is a school teacher, and she told him that there was discussions in the school that a mother wanted to put a litter box in one of the bathrooms. And he told me this, and I talked about it on here. And then people were saying, that's not true. It's an internet rumor. So I contacted him again, and I said, tell me exactly what she said and contact her and find out. She no longer works for that school. She works for another school. Mm. She contacted the other school. She didn't get a response. I don't think they actually did it. I think there was discussions about doing it because there was one particularly wacky mother, but it doesn't seem that there's any proof that they put a litter box in there. Out of all of my searching, I could only find one poster, one guy who said he had used a litter box. Mm. So this one person who was saying that he thought it was kinky and he liked to use it, liked to use a litter box. Mm. So that was all I could find.
Okay, so that is as close as we're probably gonna come to Joe Rogan admitting that he was wrong. Not really apologizing for misinforming literally millions of people about the kitty litter thing, literally months and months and months after it had been debunked over and over and over again. But he sort of admitted that he couldn't find any evidence of it, and he talked about it on his show. So I guess that's progress. Anna, what do you think?
I think that maybe doing the digging he did after making the statements on the show should have happened before he made the statements on the show.
Maybe,
but you know what? I'll take it. I mean, this is a man who kept digging his heels in on ivermectin, regardless of the fact that there wasn't at the time even a single study that proved that ivermectin, not a single credible study that ivermectin was effective in treating COVID. He dug his heels in. He still won't acknowledge that he was wrong. So
yeah,
sure, this is a little bit of progress. I'll take it where I can get it. Awesome.
Yeah, I will. Look, he's, you know, for better or worse, spoiler alert, worse, he's very influential. And so good that he corrected that. I believe he originally made the claims on an episode he was doing with Tulsi Gabbard, who she's not gonna change on any of this. She would never admit that she was wrong, and she's probably busy right now endorsing extreme Republican candidates for some reason. She recently endorsed a guy who used to blog post about how women shouldn't be allowed to vote. Isn't that fun? What a lefty she is. Anyway, This is at least progress. Joe Rogan is 5% more open to admitting he was wrong than most right wingers. So thank you, Joe. Are you not merciful?
I mean, just last month, 2,000 pounds of fentanyl came across our border. That could kill 500 million people. We're coming into Halloween. Every mom in the country right now is worried, what if this gets into my kid's Halloween basket?
You're talking about the rainbow
fentanyl. The rainbow fentanyl. What if my teenager gets this?
Okay, in the weeks leading up to Halloween, there was endless discussion about rainbow fentanyl killing kids across America. There were endless editorials and news pieces and reports and discussion on Fox News about it. Well, hey, I got some great news for you. This is a shocker. It didn't happen. Not a single kid got fentanyl in their candy. It wasn't actually a thing. That's great news, Anna, and a big surprise. Because it really seemed likely that that was gonna happen. All the people talking about it had really good reasons to be worried about it. They were very responsible in covering it, but thank God no kid got sick on fentanyl on Halloween.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think we've been a little unfair toward conservatives and their concern that children would be ingesting harmful drugs. I mean, there are some prominent examples that should worry you. I mean, there's one prominent child who seems to be on drugs every day, and that's Charlie Kirk. And I'm sure conservatives are worried and they want to do something about that. I mean, we've seen his facial twitches and all of that. So I get it. I get it. But alas, they were wrong about rainbow fentanyl and Halloween candy. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they're relieved that they were wrong and that no children were harmed during the celebrations this week.
Yeah, that amount of fentanyl that could kill 500 million people but would not take down Charlie Kirk. He's got a tolerance, he can take it. Also, can we stop with that like it's enough to kill 500 million? Well, yeah, I guess if you were to separate out and get everyone, yeah, I could take a bullet and line up 50 people and maybe kill them all. That's not how violence works, actually. It's just so stupid. But look, more importantly than just the thing about fentanyl, more importantly than debunking the idea that drug dealers whose literal business is to make money by selling drugs would for some reason give away all of their drugs like they're the bizarre candy store owner at the beginning of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory who didn't accept any payment for any of the candy he gave to the kids for some reason. None of these Halloween conspiracy theories are true. I won't say conspiracy theories, but misinformation about Halloween. There's no rainbow fentanyl. There's no razors in apples. There's no poison in your Snickers. None of that stuff has literally ever happened. And yet for some reason, every single Halloween, we have to go through this little ritual in the same way that we put up fake spider webs and we put on a mask. We also pretend that everyone is trying to randomly kill kids. It's nonsense. Any final thoughts, Anna?
Okay. Yeah, well. It is nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. Honestly, I'm super tired of the same recycled stories every year. And with Halloween, it's so predictable at this point. There are endless stories about drugs or harmful things in the Halloween candy, or just endless stories about why one costume or the other is too offensive. And it's getting more and more ridiculous every year.
Yeah.
Like someone got mad at, I think Kendall Jenner or Kylie Jenner, one of the Jenners, wearing a sexy Jesse from Toy Story costume.
Why?
I don't know. Everyone relax.
I don't know, but I feel like it would only be responsible of me to look that up.
Everybody anyway, calm down and just let people live, okay?
Exactly, 100%. Yeah. Anyway, that is unfortunately all the time. The candy shop owner was a dentist in Wonka, that's why it was free. Is that true? Is that canonical? Is that why he was giving away all that candy? That's fascinating. I'm gonna look that up. Anyway, I wanna thank everyone on the linear platforms or on the podcast for watching and or listening the first hour of the show. We do appreciate that. And if you're listening to the podcast, please go on Apple Podcasts and rate and review us. It's very helpful for discoverability. But if you're on all the other platforms, member stuff, Twitch, YouTube, all that, we got way more to talk about in the aftermath, including horrific anti-trans harassment and more. Don't go anywhere, we'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.